Welcome along to the RTE Rugby Podcast. It is the final round of the Guinness Six Nations. Ireland heading to Italy this Saturday, but the Grand Slam hopes are gone. A 42-27 defeat to France at the weekend has left the championship hopes pretty slim, even with a round left to play. The short version, Ireland have to beat Italy, and more than likely with a bonus point and a good points buffer. They then need England to either lose or win narrowly against Wales. A bonus point England win would be enough for them to climb back ahead of Ireland. And then both sides would need France to slip up against Scotland. Stranger things have happened, but not very often. Anyway, Bernard Jackman is with me. We will be joined a little bit later by Filippo Fratti, who will give us a breakdown on Italy and the wider picture of Italian rugby. But Bernard, before we get into any of the technical and tactical talk from the weekend, a big story hit the news yesterday, which has created a real burning talking point this week. Not that we needed any more of them, but the Leicester Tigers have reportedly put an offer on the table for Jack Crowley as they try to replace Andre Pollard for next season. Talk of around £600,000 sterling a year, which is a hefty enough sum for any player to be offered. Irish players are always linked with big teams in and around contract season. This is not the first time we've had a transfer rumour around an Ireland international, but this one in particular, just given the narrative of the last few months, has put some real pressure on the IRFU right now.
It has. I would be shocked if that's the figure, to be honest, because in the current market, 600,000 gets you pretty much whoever you want. You know, as in, like, you get a Jordy Barrett and Archie Snyman type player, Ricky Ioane, within reason. It's a big number, and I'd have absolutely no doubt that Leicester Tigers are interested in Jack Crowley. They'd be looking for a 10 for ages. They'd be looking at lots of 10s. And now it's getting to March. Obviously, someone like Jack coming from outside the Premiership, they can use a marquee spot. So that means it doesn't come out of salary cap. So there's no limit to what they can spend, except their own financial restrictions in terms of their overall budget, not salary cap. And obviously, potentially upsetting some players who play for Leicester Tigers or whatever in terms of their own internal market. I have no doubt that they would be interested in Jack Crowley. He may have an offer. I doubt that's the figure, but that's my own opinion. Regardless, I don't see it happening, to be honest. I think it'd be a very sad move for Munster and Jack if he left Ireland and became ineligible for Ireland. I know it's a tricky one because his agent's job is to get him the best possible deal. His prerogative is to get the best possible deal because he's a professional rugby player. And lots of people will say, just give him a central contract. But that's not how it works. That's not how it works, unfortunately. And the RFU can't be pushed into giving people central contracts because potentially they have an offer. It should only be for players who are guaranteed to be in the Irish starting team. I would say that's the model when you look at it. Absolutely imperative that they stay in the system. So it's a very tricky one for David Humphreys to sort this out because there's a maximum that you can get on a provincial contract. And it's nowhere near 600,000. It's nowhere near, I'd say, nowhere near 400,000. Now, obviously, the difference is you would say that Jack Crowley's going to be in every Irish 2023, whether he starts or subs, for the next 2 years, barring injury. And that is how you make the difference. You know, so there's match fees and win bonuses, etc., that can add to a provincial contract to make sure that you're not far away from what your market value is elsewhere. But that's not guaranteed. So if he gets a provincial contract and he gets the maximum provincial contract, and let's just say that's 300 grand, and his offer in England is 600 grand, if that's the offer, or it's even 500 grand. There's a 200,000 difference there, which obviously is a huge amount. But you don't play for Ireland anymore. You don't play for your province of birth. Now, and again, like there's a value on that that's not monetary, but it's not an unlimited value. You know what I mean? As well, it has to be. So I mean, I'm really fascinated to see how this plays out. I don't think the RFU, as I said, can be bullied into giving a special contract if that wasn't what they had planned. But also, I don't see any acceptable circumstance that we lose Jack Crowley to Irish rugby either. So, and I think he's invaluable to Munster, and he's invaluable to Ireland as well. So it's a really tricky one. And in a situation like this, you would like to hope that no matter what it takes, a situation, an agreement can be found, whether that's private money on top of the maximum provincial contract, or the RFU decide to give him a central contract. But I think that's a slip. The central contract one is a slippy one because you're basically doing it on not what we've seen Farrell probably in November and Simon Easterby say is your locked in first choice 10. Like, I don't think Sam or him should have a central contract yet, to be honest.
I
I think
can I
Lee.
can I can I disagree on part? I would actually, I would be inclined to give both central contracts. And I know central contracts, it kind of it jumps out in your head, or in everyone's head, like it's mega money. But I think there is a lot to be said for, given the position and the importance of out half, and I think unless you have a Johnny Sexton who is a well-established player and is clearly by a mile the best out half in the country, and has an enormous legacy, obviously then you can have your one out half on a central contract. I think it's actually smart enough to have two out halves on central contracts and just really, really protect that position long term. And it does, I don't think it means both of those players have to be on 500, 600 grand with the IRFU, but I think it just kind of, I think it gives a bit of stability to the position going forward.
Yeah, I don't look, I don't disagree with that. I just don't I don't think well, it depends on why you think that. If you thought that a month ago,
I would,
I
I
would,
honestly, I would, but regardless of this, I would have said
yeah.
back in November or so, I would have been inclined to say they need to have those two players locked in
Yeah.
nationally.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I don't disagree with that at all. I would have no issue with that. Like, I want Jack Crowley to be playing for Ireland. I want him to be playing for Munster.
Make
I
that
think Munster
clear.
would be.
Make that clear.
Yeah. No, but I know, but I do. I think you build a team around him. What my challenge is from a financial point of view is just how you navigate that, because that potentially will cause the Irish system has been pretty good at getting our best players tied down without any fuss. Let's be honest. The last big casualty was Sexton, and he still became available for Ireland. Zeebo
Zeebo.
left, but Zeebo, who else?
Zeebo is it.
Zeebo. Yeah, Zeebo was probably the last one. But then he was faced and fit with Joe, you would have thought. And I don't know if Joe would have been saying to the RFU, I need this guy. Whereas I think, Simon and Farrell would be saying they need Jack. It's just a challenge of the system. And also, just to be clear, like, it's really bad timing for Jack because, and I know lots of Munster fans will say it's not his fault he hasn't been picked, but he hasn't been picked for four games. He'd play against Italy start this weekend, and he's done nothing wrong, but he hasn't had a big Six Nations and he hasn't been able to. But again, that's often the case. It's in if they don't select somebody and they haven't had the opportunity to play, you still can't, you can't give them leeway for that in the contract negotiations. And sorry, my main point was the RFU are cutting things back, right? Across the board, our income from the Six Nations, unless things go incredibly well for us, is going in terms of prize money. So the winner was due to get 7.78. The Grand Slam was worth another 1.2 on top of that. So that's 9 million. If we finish runner up, which we probably need England to lose, you would say we get 4.19. If we finish third, that's 2.99, right? So you pay your player bonuses out of that for the Six Nations, which won't be as big, obviously, as if it would have been if they had won it. But you wouldn't have much left for a million of that, I would imagine. So 30 players, yeah, a million of that roughly. So you have 2 million coming back into the game, and that's going to have effects elsewhere. Your probably your sponsorship agreements, I'm sure, I'd imagine, are incentivized on where you finish in the Six Nations. that's going to be less income. So it couldn't be worse time for a player who's in that kind of tricky situation where they haven't been able to play in the Six Nations because they haven't been picked, which is often worse than if they've been injured, because you can say, well, they would have made us better if they were fit. But yeah, he's come on off the bench and had big impacts. He's incredibly important to Irish rugby. But it will go against the grain of what they have been doing. Neil, I have no issue if they give two central contracts and two tens. But my fear is because there's cutbacks elsewhere, can you cut back on development, or each province has two players less because you've decided you want to give two central contracts and tens, or can you not just get that deal done for Sam on a provincial contract, Jack on a provincial contract, with whatever else you need to do, private party sponsorship agreements, etc., and keep him in Ireland. Like, that's the priority, is to keep him in Ireland. Absolutely. But I think the challenge is now is probably it's a bad time to go looking for a central contract for him. But I really hope they can keep him in Ireland.
The other part of it is the optics of it as well. And I know you can't just be baying to the masses on social media and, as you say, just handing out a central contract just to appease people. But the RFU do need to be careful long term, because there is a simmering disillusionment in parts of the country. I'd like it, as has been referenced a lot, 11 of the 14 central contracts on the table for next season are Leinster players, one Munster, two Connacht, nobody from Ulster. David Humphreys sat down with us before the Six Nations, and I asked him, was there a risk that the kind of Leinster-centric way the IRFU has ended up over the last while, with so many central contracts, with just one provincial team kind of consistently challenging for trophies, could that create a disillusionment with the fan base around the country down the line? And he absolutely admitted there is a risk of it. And like a snapshot of the reaction to yesterday's rumor would indicate that the shit would hit the fan if the Leicester Tigers were to sign Jack Rowley.
Yeah, look, just to be really, really clear, I don't.
I know, I know, I know, I know.
I think that the RFU and Munster should do everything in their power to make sure Jack Crowley is secure in Ireland. But I think the risk is giving out central contracts based on an offer from another club, or a potential outrage. I think the reality is. Because the reality is the and I'm look I've been quite clear on this for a couple of years, is I think the provinces need support financially, right? I think they need to be able to bring in better players, always keep their best players, and Jack Crowley is one of those. And so I think a solution needs to be found. I'm just not sure that automatically giving out a central contract is the way forward for it. That's all. I just think it blows up the central contract system. And I know it's probably flawed, and they've tried to address that with the 30% funding, or up to 30% funding change. And I absolutely agree that's become very Leinster focused. But you're at a time now where your pathway looks less stronger than before. Questions around coaching, all those different things that are going to need finance. It's just the mechanics of how to get there. That's all. The mechanics of how to get there, for me, are going to be really interesting. And for Humphreys, he'd have to tread very carefully on this, because it may lead to issues further down the line, where there's been a kind of a break from protocol, and it causes this whole system to be in question. Just to clarify, I want to get Jack Crowley the best deal he can get, but I think it may need to be provincial. And to be fair to the RFU, bringing Zeebo back, if you remember, bringing Zeebo back, there was a little bit, there was,
The
if there was,
IRFU contributed kind
yes.
of too, it wasn't, and again, you like as you say around the central contract stuff, that also in my mind is an absolutely perfectly would be a perfectly adequate compromise if the
Yeah.
IRFU can kind of work with Munster
Yeah. So sorry. So
to
yeah.
get
So
to keep
I
him.
like that's for me. That's what c can happen here. You've
Yeah.
got a player of national interest, national importance, provincial interest, provincial importance. You just try and get it done. But I think what I've read today is everyone just goes, give them a central contract. And I think that's not the right solution unless that's something that they wanted to do anyway. Because Leicester Tigers are looking for a 10. You know what I mean? There's always going to be someone looking for a player, you know, particularly a player as good or anyone who plays for Ireland. They're always going to be of interest to others. But I'd be more in favor of a provincial contract plus private investment, or provincial contract with help from the IRFU, on the understanding that this is kind of an unusual situation, and that he is a player of national importance as Sam is. But I don't think either of them should be getting a central contract at the moment, because if you look at the other central contracts, they kind of are players who were guaranteed to be first choice, or that was the idea anyway, you know. But yeah, we'll see how it plays out. But tough for Jack, particularly because obviously he's due to start, I think, this weekend, and he'll be focused on actually showing that he is the best, you know. So yeah, but I understand it's probably Leicester probably will want to get someone locked down pretty quickly. And the fact that he's off contract is, and I'd imagine the reason he's off contract is because his agent or he or Munster were hoping that he would naturally have had a big November and a big Six Nations, and we'd all be saying, wow, sure, of course he deserves a central contract, you know. But the problem is, I don't think you can factor in the fact that he, which a lot of some Munster fans would be saying, that he was robbed of four starts by the Leinster media in the Six Nations. He didn't get four starts, so it makes his case harder.
Yeah, he didn't get four starts, but you kind of have to factor in at the same time. He has also played all but one game since the World Cup. So there's a narrative out there that's kind of been spun around that he's been kind of like kicked to the curb
Yeah, he's very
by
important.
the Irish management, which is just non-existent. And I would absolutely stress as well, everything we know about Jack Crowley, I don't think he's walking around every day feeling sorry for himself, because that just doesn't seem to be the way he is. But people are kind of projecting that image onto him, which I just don't think exists whatsoever. Okay, let's move on, because we could probably spend another hour talking through that one, but there are other bits we want to hit on. On Against the Head on Monday, you put a very good piece together just looking at the sheer physicality that France brought on Saturday and the sheer venom they were putting into their defensive line, the contacts, their every carry they were making. And they were, particularly in that little third quarter of the game, blowing Ireland off the ball. The second try, I just thought, was an unbelievable example of, regardless of what people think about the Flamin and Peter O'Mahony clear out, but I was watching it, and there was like a run of about six or seven phases where France went from about 10 meters into the Ireland half to the try line. There wasn't any clear line break there. There wasn't any enormous hole that was being pierced. It was just hard carry after hard carry that was sending Ireland backwards. When Ireland lose games like this, we always kind of have this narrative that we don't have the power. Do you think at the weekend it was a case of Ireland not having the power, or being a bit too passive, not implementing the power they had? Because we've seen it in the past. We saw it the second test in South Africa. That was as physical as I've ever seen an Ireland team. And at times in that game, particularly in that first half, they did a job on South Africa there. So do we have the physicality, or did we just not figure out how to actually use it?
We definitely have more power in our game than we saw. I think both teams bring their maximum. France have more across the team. And there's a differential between, everyone thinks power is just mass. It's not. Like, Flamand is powerful because he's quick, right? He's quick, and he can generate power through his speed and the size that he has, and explosively. Bourassi, through footwork and speed, can have power. Zizou, Aradu, like, obviously Miafu catches the eye, but Boudinot's a bigger man than our back row, to be fair to him. But it's across. And fairness to France, they understand the importance of a Miafu, someone who moves well, who can stand up, who has mass, but they also understand that it's not just that type of profile. And I thought it was the deciding factor. I know, like, the narrative has been, Sam was poor. Mack Hansen and James Lowe were missed. Absolutely. I wouldn't disagree with any of those. The referee got some calls wrong. The Boudinot try should have been called back for the clean out and Pete. But I genuinely, so that's why my feeling in the ground was, I was in awe. I was in awe of how good France were defensively that first 20 minutes, not to give Ireland a penalty advantage, to make those good reads, how they defended overall in the game, where it wasn't the Sean Edwards blitz, which you think Ireland might have picked apart. It was a combination of, soft defense, medium line speed, the odd time coming up and closing it off, sometimes you shaping off and using the touchline. Like, they brought whatever defensive system they needed at the time to deal with Ireland, which would have really frustrated Ireland, because I think, I said on Monday night, but I think Ireland are a team who try and find space. But I think France are a team who can make space. They can make their own space. And I showed a clip pre-match, which is it's effectively, when you watch a lot of rugby, you never see teams, bar top 14 teams, and France attack the way France attack, because I would say for a lot of coaches, it would be ugly. It would be really ugly for a while. But then when it bursts into life, it's just absolutely beautiful. And an example would be the Boudinot try, where, Jean-Baptiste Gros throws the ball up to no one, really. Luku takes it, footwork. And again, he leaves it kind of up in the air to nobody. But they all flood into that channel. Dupont tried one in the first half down the right-hand side, and actually, it goes to ground, but it's unusual for them. There's always support, normally laterally, but always in behind. They call it jeu en axe, so play right behind the ball carrier, support from behind, so you can adapt to wherever he throws the ball. And it had us really pinned to our collar attack wise. And to be honest with you, some of those big hits, I felt sorry, like the players who got hit
There
from
were
an
a
Irish
few
standpoint.
hospital passes thrown in there.
So I don't like, it's very difficult if you're trying to catch a ball, coming to you and it's hanging in the air for a long time, and as soon as you get it, you can hit man a ball, like, but you, and you look weaker than you actually are. But that was, again, Gibson Park was the one who threw a lot of those passes. Like, for me, it was a sense of how stressed he felt at the breakdown, and he's trying to find a solution. And we've often seen him do that, throw an unorthodox pass in the 22, and it leads to a walk-in or a mismatch. But I think he threw them a lot earlier, or a lot than he normally would, because of how stressed he would have felt his ball carriers and his support players at the breakdown. And he felt he was looking to basically unlock a defence somewhere where we hadn't really earned a right to do it. So it was masterful. I think Ireland are better than that. For some reason, Ireland emotionally didn't seem to be where they need to be. Did the and I thought that, and the reason I thought Ireland might win w would win, was I thought that the emotional send off for Pete, for Connor, for Keane, the fact that it was 2 weeks to build up to it, the fact that there were certain players making their 50th appearance, the fact that it was do or die. We knew if we win that game, it was a grand slam on the line. The V was going to be hopping. And we just didn't seem to get to the level that we have in the past. Like our build up to France 2 years ago, which was a phenomenal performance, a phenomenal game. Emotionally, we were absolutely spot on. I remember speaking to an Irish player when he came out for the warm up, I was pitch side for RT, and I said, "How do you feel?" He said, "We are ready." And it just they knew that they were ready. And sometimes players say that and they're not ready, but. I think that'll be the big question marks for Easterby and his coaching staff, around how the mindset was, how they were emotionally, and did they get it right? Because I don't think there's that much of a gulf in the two teams, and I still think if you're a French fan, you leave that ground going, we should be able to dominate Ireland for the next 3 or 4 years, but I think Ireland aren't as bad as that. But on the day, it was pretty sobering.
Two elements of frustration, I would say, and running themes of frustration that I want to finish up on before we bring in our chat with Filippo Fratti. Attack in the 22 from an Irish point of view. You said there a couple of minutes ago that, like, Ireland, they're always looking to try find space. They seem to be really struggling to find space in the 22 over the course of this campaign, not just against France at the weekend. So obviously they had that period of dominance early on in the game, the first 15, 18 minutes before the yellow card, which we'll get to. Caelan Dorris gets held up over the line. This seems to be a bit of a recurring theme with Ireland, getting held up over the line. It definitely happened once in the Wales game. I can't remember exactly who it was.
Scotland a few times, wasn't
It happened twice in the Scotland game,
it?
leading up to Caelan Dorris eventually scoring their second try. I don't have the numbers on how many times other teams are getting held up. I'm purely speaking on what I seem to be seeing watching the matches. It's definitely coming more and more into the game. Teams are getting way better at soaking that tackle close to the line and kind of, I suppose, falling back over the line underneath the ball carrier. And it seems to be, it's a really interesting one, I think, going forward to see how attacks are going to start working around that. But it does feel to me Ireland are coming out the wrong side of those collisions a little bit too often now.
And I think, to be honest, there's been a gradual reduction in our ball movement, like pre-contact, you know. So the reason Ireland were so good attacking wise wasn't that we were any more powerful, but because of the shapes we were presenting to the defense, they were very rarely able to get double hits or a hit where they could get down nice and low and just pick you up and drive you back, like we saw numerous times. So, and I think that's around our animation, and how late we're passing the ball, the options that ball carrier has. Like we saw one where Joe McCarthy gets picked up and driven back. And we actually won a penalty for it because I think Ty Burn was judged to have been tackled by Boudinot. But I thought, for me, he was actually going to pass the ball anyway. Like our timing was a little bit off. And it's chicken and egg. Is that because the first ruck is slow, and then everything else is like your timing off, or is it because you haven't actually dented them with your first carry? I actually thought, if you look back at Ireland's launch, like our first three phases off scrum or line out, where we've pre-planned. We were actually on the front foot, but again, we weren't able to keep that momentum. We weren't able to stay on top of them because we would have an average enough predictable phase. And I think that was the one. I mean, you know, the one with Doris against France, he runs into two back rows, but the pass goes across, I think, two players. But again, if you're that defender, you're saying, right, this if you watch Ireland a lot,
This is Doris's ball.
they're gonna put a ball across the face of two to that guy. And and it's just probably become predictable. We were the best team in the world at turning red zone entries into scores. We were relentless there. We very rarely would go to the line with a risk of getting held up. We'd recoil back. But just things have slipped, Neil, and have been slipping for a little while. Like discipline, and discipline is multiple things. It's your discipline to be in the right place on attack. It's your discipline in terms of the penalties you give away. It's also your discipline in terms of, you know, having a feel for what shot to use, or, you know, do I actually go for line here, or just stop short to make sure the next player has a chance. And the problem we have potentially, and I'm not blaming Leinster for this, is but Leinster's discipline is actually. Let's just in terms of penalties given away has gradually gone up, but they see that as being a risk worth taking, because the ones you don't get penalised in means that you slow down the ball, and also they're not afraid of their life of teams punishing them in the 22, you know, because they have the power to match most teams in this competition. We'll see what happens when they play Bordeaux and Toulouse. So I think the challenge for Easter being fired in November was trying to get a team that's made up of the majority of Leinster players who are winning all the time. So, but then what's the Irish model? You know, what's the Irish game model, which historically was really good discipline, really good discipline. And I think you're seeing that slip little by little, but it's having a big effect on our national team. And this isn't just a reaction to France. And I'm annoyed at myself when I came out of the ground going, how did I not see that result coming? But I felt there was a margin of progression in Ireland, or improvement, that wasn't evident against Wales, wasn't evident against Scotland, wasn't evident against England. Unfortunately, on Saturday we didn't find it, and hence you get the and France found it. France found it another little bit, but to be fair to France, they showed us against Wales, they showed us against Italy, they showed us against England that they are the most dangerous team in the competition for a long, long time. They're going to break. They might break England's record of total points scored since 2001 if they have a big score against Scotland. They've broken their own record of points scored with a game to go. They are playing a game that none of the rest of us are close to matching at the moment.
You mentioned the discipline, so I'm going to bring that in here now. And you said bit slowly, but kind of it's slowly been deteriorating. I'd nearly disagree with that just based on the numbers. The penalty count, interestingly enough, that was one of the big things we were talking about post November and last year's Six Nations. The penalty count has improved. It's improved a good bit in this championship, but the cards are the major thing. So I feel like I've said this 400 times over the last couple of years, nearly on every single podcast. But if you look at the numbers of cards Ireland were conceding and the number of cards Ireland are now conceding, it is stark the difference between the summer of 2021 and the end of the Rugby World Cup in 2023. Ireland gave away three yellow cards in 29 matches. So that is one card roughly every nine games. It was by a mile, by an absolute mile, the best kind of like discipline record in terms of cards across any of the Six Nations or Rugby Championship teams. Since the Rugby World Cup, Ireland have played 15 matches and they've given up 14 cards. Just under a card every single game. No other team has conceded more cards since the Rugby World Cup. South Africa have conceded the same number. So to go from giving away a card every nine games to just under a card every single game, it feels like there has been just a complete mentality switch in there that they are just taking so many more chances. And I know, like, as you probably said, there's an argument to be made that some of that comes back into Leinster pushing the boundaries more and more, and that feeding in with the Irish system, because maybe Leinster are more comfortable dealing with 14 players and more comfortable taking those risks. But then, and I know you spoke about it on Against the Head, you can't legislate for Joe McCarthy just grabbing someone by the collar as you're running back. Like, in this day and age with TMOs, how is that not going to be picked up by anything? And it's something McCarthy, like, he's getting a reputation for giving away these silly penalties. He spoke to us in a press conference last week about how he got a bit of a bollocking off Paul O'Connell for that penalty he gave against Wales at the lineout, where he just reaches around and grabbed, I think, was it Faletau as he was coming down off the air. Like, for someone who's just got a central contract in the last few weeks, that sort of stuff has to come out of the game.
Yeah, I think Donald was right. I think that probably, you get a bollocking from Paul, you do something more ill-disciplined. The next sanction is probably selection. I mean, other players, they have to, if they want to improve discipline, there has to be consequences. And ideally, it's not people being dropped or whatever. But if not, people see that and it doesn't lead to change the behavior. And I said, yeah, I do think it's Leinster's mentality is destroy everything, push the boundaries, and the box did that, and that could lead Leinster to where they need to get to at test level, with the physical capacity that we have, and what the evidence is telling us that it's not serving us well by playing with 14, it's not serving us well playing with 14. And while France didn't maul us over per se, I mean that maul
It
after Joe
traveled.
got
It traveled.
it was going to be a try probably anyway, or a penalty. Like they and then some of their mauls out the field were actually very impressive. They were able to get us going backwards. But like we got flustered. Like we looked so we'd attack for 20 minutes, Neil, and then we lost a high ball in the air, and then we got it back, and then obviously we threw it back to Jamie Osborne. He kicked long. France had the backfield filled, and it's very similar to the try we conceded against England.
England last
That
year.
do you remember? And like again, we were caught short against England. A lot more pace, but Joe was in Joe when that ball was passed back to Jamie Osborne, he was actually kind of on his haunches. Like he was like I meant to show it the other night, but it was like he was fatigued. And I understand, like they've just given everything they had to try and score, and suddenly then you're back in your own 22, you're exiting. And at first, to me, if we lose them, I don't have the widescreen for the second yet, but we lose them off camera for a second. But by the time that ball goes to Ramos, he's actually sprinted to me outside Robbie Henshaw, so he hasn't been lazy at all. But Ramos sees him and just lights up, you know what I mean? And Ramos takes him on the outside. But Joe actually has the speed to get there, I think. But unfortunately, maybe because of fatigue, he hasn't communicated with Calvin Nash. And Calvin Nash doesn't know he's going to get there, and he jumps in, if you remember. And that puts Bia Barry away, and Bia Barry chips it. And we actually had lots of cover. Like, we were scrambling like hell. But Joe, and I have to think it's a fatigue thing, or he's overly stressed that he does that. But the consequences of that in Test rugby against, you get away with it against Italy. You get away with it against Wales. You might get away with it against Scotland. But against France, against South Africa, against New Zealand, maybe Australia, if they come back to where they were, you actually don't. You don't. And the reality is, as well, is this England may finish ahead of us, this Six Nations. But I think, as we've seen over the last 5 or 6 years, it's been a two-team competition. It's been us and France. And I had a bit of an argument a discussion with someone from TV, not an RT, before the match, and he was saying, "Oh, what France will turn up?" And I said, to be fair to France, when De Pont plays in the Six Nations or November, they actually do turn up. They've had a couple of misses. Like, they lost to us in a phenomenal game 2 years ago. They've been first or second, for the last couple of, or last 5 years, I think,
They
6 years.
lost one of the all-time great World
Yeah.
Cup
You
quarterfinals
know,
to South Africa.
November they win November all the time. They beat the All Blacks, they beat the Box. Like, they're in November, they're rock solid. The only reason they're not in the top two in the world is because in the summer, when we're going off with our best players, their best players are playing top 14 semi-final, final. But they have found more talent now. So they went to Argentina with a very young squad, they went to Australia, they're going to go to New Zealand this year without their stars. But they'll probably find five or six more players that can play. Like, Saran has been added because of De Pont. Like, Saran would start for he wouldn't start for Ireland, but he'd be in with nearly every other team in the Six Nations 23 for sure, and he's fourth choice for them. So yeah, and they're not perfect. They'll have bad days, but they're way more consistent than maybe we give them credit for. I think anyway. Last year it was a hangover from the World Cup. De Pont didn't play against Ireland. And Paul Williams got suspended or got sent off. But in general, they're a pretty consistent team.
They are, and we'll park that conversation for now. But it does just raise the biggest question of all from the weekend: how in the name of God are they not going for a Grand Slam this
Yeah.
weekend?
I
It's
think we
incredible.
got look at I think you can blame Penno. Penno was thinking about equaling Blanco's record. But if you look at actually how they ripped England apart, everywhere bar putting the ball over the line, it actually was a like a, they could have had such a it should be having a Grand
They
Slam,
could
I
have
think.
scored 45 points
Yeah,
against England.
exactly.
Right, that's where we'll leave the Ireland France discussion, Ireland Italy conversation coming up next with Filippo Fratti. Now turning our attention towards Ireland's final game of the Six Nations away to Italy, 2:15 p.m. kickoff live on RT2 and RT Player this Saturday. Joining myself and Bernard at the moment now is former Italy international and rugby pundit for Sky Sports in Italy, Filippo Fratti. Pippo, for those who don't know you, my understanding is that you're Italy's version of Bernard Jackman.
No, a little bit too much. And unfortunately, we do not have like many rugby podcasts in Italy. So I just do my best when I have a chance to comment a game for Sky. And that's all. That's all.
Well,
Maybe some clips on X. That's all.
doing my research, I think you must know what you're talking about because I saw you had predictions on Instagram for last weekend's games, and your prediction for Ireland against France was France 41, Ireland 26. It was
Yes.
42-27 in the end. You were close enough.
Yes, very close, very close. Maybe I was lucky, but I think that the way France is playing rugby now is a bit different from everyone else, and I think the 70 points they scored against Italy the week before was a sign. and that they are doing something different. They've been very unlucky against England. I think it was a game that they could won by 40 points or 50 maybe, but they waste so many chances. And for the way I think Ireland was playing and the way France is playing, that's what makes me think that the difference could be this 20 points of difference between France and Ireland, and yes, it was the case.
And before we actually talk about this weekend's game, I do want to mention as well, you do have a connection to Ireland at the moment. Tell us a little bit about your son based in Tipperary.
Yes, my son Marcello, the oldest, is playing in Cashel, and yes, last year at the end of the season, he wants to do an experience outside Italy. So of course, the first person I asked for was Bernard, and he talked about the Bective Rangers in Dublin. But my son has a degree in agriculture, so then he came this chance in Cashel, Tipperary, in the countryside, and he loves that kind of place. And it came to a friend of us, Simone Ragusi, is an Italian coach who's playing and coaching in Ireland. And then this friend of him, Ray Moloney, was coaching in Cashel. And so, yes, things happen. And he's having the best time of his life, honestly. It's 7 months that he's there, he's living there. And he's walking in a pub, Feehan's, right in the center of the town. Very nice place. I've been there with the rest of the family in November, and he's playing rugby. He's new friends, new experience. He's learning the language, so I think it will be a great experience for the rest of his life. So yes, very happy.
And they're having a good old season as well, Bernard. You picked a good way to hook them up. What's pushing for promotion up to 1B?
Yeah, so they're having a great year. I think it's brilliant. For players to come and likewise of Irish players to go and play, in France or Italy and just have that experience, particularly when they're young. I got to know people about 25 years ago. We went on a tour with the Penguins to Germany and Argentina. So it's funny how friendships can last a long time, and that's the beauty of touring or getting a chance to go and play overseas. So it's great to see people's son doing so well, Cashel doing so well.
Yeah, absolutely, and best wishes to your son, people. So looking at Italy at the moment, people. This is the second year of Gonzalo Quesada, came in after the World Cup last year. A really, really good Six Nations, two wins, and that draw against France that really could have been a win as well.
Yes,
This year,
sure.
though, so far one win against Wales, which people expected Italy to do, and they went and did it. But three defeats. The defeat against Scotland was a reasonable performance. It was relatively close, but two heavy defeats in a row against France and England. Can you tell us about the changes we've seen in this team since Gonzalo Quesada came in to replace Kieran Crowley?
Yes, I think the biggest change Gonzalo made was in game management. With I think Crowley brings a new attacking shape, improved a lot our attacking style, even thanks to Neil Barnes. Neil Barnes was a Kiwi coach who was part of the Kieran Crowley coaching staff. And I think he was the one who introduced these vertical pots, yes, Italy was famous for. And but I think yes, what Gonzalo bring was this game management in terms of with Crowley we overplayed. We often didn't play in the right part of the field. We keep the ball too much, and with Gonzalo we immediately see this. The exit were good in our 22. In the 40 meters we use a lot of box kicking. So I think this is the biggest impact Gonzalo have on the style of rugby Italy played. And then of course he was lucky enough to have very good players in the right position. I think about Capuozzo, I think about Minoncello, and Brex and Garbisi as a playmaker are doing a great job. And then other two aspects, I think he improved Gonzalo, the fitness and the general skills. He brings with his new coaching staff, Michele Colosio. Michele Colosio is the head of SNC, and he works for many years in the top 14 with La Rochelle and Bordeaux. and he knows what the fitness required to play at this level. So I think he did an excellent job. And then Philippe Doucet is a French coach who coached for the Italy Federation many years ago, and then he spent his life around he spent times in Kings in South Africa, Edinburgh. Then he works with Bernard in Grenoble too, as well. He was part of the French team with Brunel, and he's a brilliant coach. He's got new ideas, new method. I know that your general skills doesn't improve when you're spending like a couple of weeks with the national team, but it brings new ideas, new method that players can work daily at their club as well. So I think these three aspects: game management, fitness, and general skills.
Bernard, as I kind of said, the results in this year's championship would appear obviously that they've kind of taken a little bit of a backward step. What's your read been of Italy? Because it seems like they're scoring some of the best tries I think I've ever seen week on week. They like probably they have scored the best tries of the championship, but the issue is that they just seem to be conceding so much more. Last year defensively they were quite watertight. I think Ireland put 30, 35 points on them at the Aviva, and that was the most anyone put on them over last year's championship.
Yeah, and that was probably the biggest, and I think that comes from, as people said, the game management. So if you manage the game well, if you kick well, you're not as exposed on defense. And I think some of the brilliant tries they've scored is probably because their skill sets improved. They've got some very talented players. They've got more energy to attack, because they're not overplaying. So they're playing the better quality ball. But the problem is, yeah, as you said, I mean, like France were exceptional on the day and they exposed every mistake. I think more worrying for them was how easily England scored. And probably again, Scotland wasn't too bad. But just I'd love to hear people's. I think they're a very dangerous side. I think if you let them express themselves, they can rip you apart. But unfortunately, it's hard to see them beating Ireland because their defense is so vulnerable at the moment. But I'd love to know people's feeling on why maybe defensively they're not as strong people as they looked to be last year.
But I think that now the next step that Gonzalo Quesada and the Federation must do is maybe to find a person who can coach their mental skills. I think, I mean, defense is mostly, of course, technique and to have a right system. But the way you sell this to the players makes a big difference. You must create a philosophy that it's how bad you want to defend, how desperate you are in certain area of the fields. And think about the most success time in the All Blacks history was when they won back-to-back champions in World Cup 2011, 2015, and Gilbert Inoca was their mental and skills coach, and everyone recognized that he was one probably the best, the most important coach in that period of time. And so I think Italy needs a coach like this, or a coach like Sean Edwards, like Jacques Nienaber, that I think that they have both quality, good defense coach and very good at skills, mental skills coach. Because you now Richard Hodge is the defense coach of Italy. I think he is in charge from right before the summer tour in Tonga and Samoa. Sorry about on my phone. Sorry. But again, he's a good defense coach, and I'm sure he is. But again, now everyone knows how to defend. You can rush, you can cruise. I mean, it's the way you sell this to the players. I think that makes a big difference. And at the moment, maybe we lack of this with
Just
Italy
on
team.
people, I agree. I think Richard Hodges is a very good coach. He coached in Cardiff, obviously was in the Italian system with Zebre. And I've no doubt that the system is a system of, for whatever reason, and maybe it's you've a tide. Just this year, it looks like they're not really concerned about defending, their line with everything they have. And Gonzalo is somebody. I think my understanding of it is, I'd love to hear your opinion, is he understands Italian mentality. He obviously has experience at a very high level, mindset, culture of the group. But as you said, at the moment, it looks like they don't have that real mindset on defense of
Yes.
making the teams that they play against work very, very hard to score.
Yes, definitely. Definitely 100%, Bernard.
I'd like to talk to you as well, Pippo, about specifically one player, Tommaso Menancello. Over the
Yes.
last, I think over the last couple of years, has just become one of my favorite players in the world to watch, whether it's with Benetton or whether it's with Italy. And he's still just 22 years old. He is on track to being like Italy's next global superstar to the level
Yeah.
that Sergio Parisse was back in the day. Can
Sure,
you
sure, sure,
just tell us,
sure.
can you tell us about Tommaso Menancello's story and how he has come to be?
Yes, he's born in Treviso. So he do all the pathway in Treviso Youth, and then I think he takes part of the center of the development players in Treviso. We have actually three in Italy, one in Milan, one in Rome, and one in Treviso. So he was part of this pathway. And then I think he played his first game with Benetton when he was 17, and he scored a sensational try. Was just 17. And you can clearly see at this age how strong he was and how bright his future could be. And I agree with you. I think he's one of the best players in that position, and I think he easily can play in every nation of the world with in that position. And I agree again with you. It's a the level of Paris, and is in the few Italian players who can play maybe for other country.
And Bernard, as I said, 22 years old as well. So
Yes.
there's still a pretty high ceiling left in where he can go.
Yeah, and his midfield teammate Brex, I think, has signed for Toulon for 3 years on big
Yeah.
money. I mean, I think that's the fact that it obviously Zebre had better results recently, but Treviso are strong, and then you also have these players playing, for clubs outside of Italy as well, or coming back in with hopefully new ideas and belief. And what do you think, people? Do you think the best thing for Italy over the next 10 years is to allow their best players, some of them go and play in other leagues, or would you prefer to have them all back in Treviso and Zebre, or whoever replaces Zebre long term, if that's what happens?
No, Bernard. I think that we must be realistic. We cannot offer what maybe a top 14 team or Premiership team can offer to young players. So I think yes, that could be a great chance for players to improve, maybe quicker, maybe faster than they were doing in Italy. Because Menoncello is an exception. It's something really one in a million. Because if I think back to our best Six Nation before the last one was 2013 when we beat Ireland in Rome, and we beat France as well, and many players of that team used to play in France or England. I remember the Castro Giovanni, Paris, Bergamasco Brother, Ongaro, and lots of players used to play overseas. And it's a big gain for Italy. Definitely, I'm 100% sure that can be a good way to get better faster.
Just a question, people, before we get into the prediction. But the Italian underage system, obviously Steve Abud, an Irishman, was there for quite a while, then
Yeah.
he left, but now he's back.
Yes.
And I mean, how what you know all the good young players coming through, the pathways. For you, in terms of the Italian system for developing young talent? What did Abu do that was really important in terms of improving the underage quality?
I think at that time we already had a good academy system. I think compared to these three, there were we had eight center of formation. I don't know how do you say
Yeah, it's
the yeah the
academy
yes
bases,
yeah
yeah.
academy yes, and one a national academy who play like a team in our second division. And Steve brings, I think, new ideas, of course, a clear method. I think he works more with the coaches than the players. I think he was good in forming coaches who are currently working with the federation. And the problem with this pathway of the players was that there is too many politics in this. For example, the past president completely dismantled the academy system in Nocenti. He dismantled this. He created two academy of around 12, 30 players, for one for Zibre and one for Treviso, that lasts 2 years. This year and next year they will disappear because the new president bring the old system. Makes sense. Do you understand what I mean? So I think we with the previous president of the federation, we lost 4 years in terms of players development and formation, because he thought that we got money because of Italy. If Italy is winning, if the first team is winning, we can get income in terms of money. So he put most of the budget in the national team, and he completely forgot the base, and so I'm afraid that we will pay these 4 years in maybe 5 or 4 years time, because now many of the players who are playing for the national team come from this pathway, come from this academy system. Fischetti, Ruzza, Menoncello, and Gambisi. I mean, many, many, many of them come through the system. I think the only one who's never been part of this is Nicotera, the hooker, who's now playing for Stade Français. But again, he's something, yes, sensational. But you know what I mean. And so hopefully now we bring back the system, and we will start to produce again players for the future.
Are you confident, people, that there is a bright future for Italy because like to by bringing back the older academy system, because we have seen in the last few years that the Italy under 20s have been producing some consistent results. They've been, finishing ahead of Scotland and Wales and
Yes.
in recent years in the Six Nations. And every year they play warm-up games for the championship against Ireland, and they're always pretty
Yeah.
close games as well. They are quite a competitive side at under 20 level.
Yeah, sure. I am for the future, for the next future. I mean, the next World Cup, I think, will be a good one for Italy. It will be a World Cup where we consistently aim to go through the group stage. And you talk about the under 20. It's not a case. I think that it's not lucky. It's not for luck that Zebre now are having these results. Because now the Zebre head coach is Massimo Brunello, and his assistant is Mattia Dolcetto. They were the Italy's under 20 coaches in the last 3 or 4 years. They were the coaches who got these very good results at Six Nation level and the World Cup level. And now most of the players that they have in the roster, in the Zebre roster, are the players who were with them in the under 20. So, it makes sense now. I think Massimo is doing a great, great job. If you think about the budget of Zibre, if you think about that they are 90% formed by Italian players, he's doing a great job. Five win in a season. I mean, I think that they have five win in the past 5 or 6 season. So So yes, that's good. And I think for the future,
And what is
it's
the future for Zebre? Because
that's
we've heard obviously there's been a lot of talk this year about a potential
yeah.
different team next season or Zebre just folding entirely. What is the word on the ground in Italy?
I mean, the new president of the federation wants to make them private, to find a sponsor like Benetton to make them become a kind of Benetton Treviso because they cost lots of money to the federation. Now, Zebre, now always Zebre are always been 100% under the federation. So the biggest sponsor for them is the federation, and but nothing happened this year. Rumors were about Petrarca Padova, which is one of the most famous and biggest team and club in Italy, because they have the president. I mean, is a very rich man, so who can really do this? But nothing happened. So for the next season, for sure, Zebre will remain in Parma, but with the lowest budget. With the lowest budget. So again, I think it can be an opportunity. I don't see this as a problem, but can be a good opportunity to, like they've done this year, to use Italian players, maybe young Italian players, younger than now, and become a kind of Connacht was a development team in back in the days in Ireland, a kind of yes of Connacht for Italy.
Before we let you go, people, I do want to kind of ask you what your thoughts are of Ireland over this campaign. I'm always eager to, we kind of live in a bubble here where we're all just looking and talking about the same teams. I'm always interested to get the thoughts of people outside Ireland as to what are the strengths and weaknesses in the Irish system at the moment.
I mean, from an Italy point of view, how to beat Ireland, I don't think, I must be honest. I think, yes, chance are very, very few. We must maybe two or three red cards can help. But now we have to try to compete for 80 minutes with you on Saturday and really hope that maybe you underestimate the victory. Maybe the loss against France left something in the player's head, so we can again have a chance to stay in the fight for 80 minutes with you. But it's very, I don't think we have now the chance to beat Ireland, even because it's true that they lost against France, but you are consistently in the top three world ranking for several years now, and so yes, it will be very tough. My point of view on Ireland now, if I can, is that maybe I don't understand why you don't use this here with Farrell involved with the Lions, so with Simon Easterby, new head coach, to maybe give chance to players to new players. For example, I'm scared to say this. I'm afraid to say this, but Conor Murray, Peter O'Mahony, and Ciarán Healy, of course, they are true legend of the sport of rugby. But I don't think in a country like Ireland, players can decide when to stop to play for the country. I mean, they can do it, but then you are not obligated to call them. Doing my commentary for Sky in and under 26 nation in the past, I put on paper some names: Paddy McCarthy, Jarmuid Mangan, Brian Gleeson, Fintan Gannon, were all outstanding players. I don't know if they are now playing at USC level or, but I remember them. They were stars at that stage of the game. They are. At the same age of Sam Prendergast and Gus McCarthy. Gus McCarthy have his chance. Sam Prendergast, of course, now is top choice for the number 10 jersey. But I think you have players, You have players that maybe deserve the same of Gus McCarthy and Sam Prendergast in order to try to prepare them for the 2027 Rugby World Cup. I think because for a nation like Ireland, that must be that you should work for that goal.
It's a debate we've been having for some time, Bernard, isn't
It is, yeah, but
it?
as you said, it's very hard when you're here to
Yeah.
get that balance right. But it's great to hear, what someone like people thinks about it. And yeah, it's we're biased or we're conditioned to what happens here. So it's great to get a
Yeah,
different.
sure. But yes, sorry if I offended, but that was not my intention. Just my opinion,
Don't worry, don't worry. People, it's been brilliant having you on the podcast. Before we go, give us a prediction for this weekend, because you did come so close with Ireland against France. I know your prediction of Italy versus England didn't go according to plan, but
No,
we'll
no,
forget
not
about that.
according.
Give
But
us a
yeah,
prediction for
just
this weekend.
for 40 minutes, I was very close to that. And to I was very close. We started with the first game is Italy Ireland. I think Ireland won by 20, 25. Then Wales England by 12, and then France Scotland. France by, yes, more than 20, 25. Yeah,
Oh wow,
2025. Yes.
Bernard, who's lifting the
Yeah.
trophy?
No, France gave the trophy. We're in third, but
Yeah.
thanks for that, people. Great to hear from you.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, guys. It was a great opportunity for me. Thank you very
And
much.
best
Talk
wishes to
soon.
your son in Cashel as well. A reminder, so much rugby coming your way across the weekend on RTE. Guinness Six Nations, Italy against Ireland, I should say, and France against Scotland, plus the trophy presentation, wherever it's going. Live on RT2 and RT Player. Italy Ireland also on the radio, RT Radio 1 on Saturday Sport. And the under 20s match, Ireland against Italy, Friday night on RT2 and RT Player.